A second difficulty arises when we consider the evidence of the apostolic community. Because if the gospel did indeed cancel the Torah and the Levitical worship system, nobody seems to have told the apostles, because the apostolic community in Jerusalem seems to have been very much involved in the temple. They continued to revere the temple, to participate in its services throughout the book of Acts. The disciples of Yeshua revered the temple because their master revered the temple. It was his father's house. As a boy, he was reluctant to leave the temple courts. As an adult, he could always be found in the temple teaching and attending the festival services. He spent the last days of his life on earth prior to his crucifixion in his favorite place, in the temple. He prophesied its coming destruction only with sorrow and weeping. He drove the money changers from its courts and quoted the prophet Isaiah saying, "My house shall be called a house of prayer." He was zealous for the temple. The book of John says in John 2:17, his disciples remember that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." He had zeal for the temple. He promised to return to the temple when Jerusalem would welcome him. After the ascension, it says his disciples were continually in the temple blessing God. We've made the argument that they were in the temple on Shavuot when the Holy Spirit was poured out upon them, that happened not in the upper room of Christian tradition and Acts chapter 1, but in the temple. And it says in the book of Acts that then after that event, they were day by day attending the temple together. The temple became what I like to say the locus. It's like focus, the locus, meaning the center of the apostolic community. They attended the daily times of sacrifice in the temple. We're told in the book of Acts that they were doing the prayers. That's the temple prayers. They congregated and taught in Solomon's portico, which was the courtyard of the temple closest to the Mount of Olives, so that they could be the first to greet King Messiah when he returned. And it says in the book of Acts, every day the believers were together in Solomon's portico, and it says the people held them in high esteem. And even when the Sanhedrin ordered them not to speak in the temple, they persisted in the temple. An angel of the Lord freed them from prison and said to them, "Go stand in the temple and speak to the people all the words of this life." And so they remained in the temple every day in the temple. I'm just quoting, this is just chunks from Acts, you know what I'm saying? I'm pulling verses from Acts. And they continued to assemble in the name of Yeshua in the temple as a result that, quote, a great many priests became obedient to the faith. When Stephen was arrested, he was charged with speaking against the temple. And I can understand how that would happen, because if he was doing the master's teachings and representing the master's teachings, he was saying that this holy temple will be left not one stone upon another, which was one of the master was the prophet of the destruction of the second temple. So if he's conveying his master's teaching, yes, the charge could be made. This man speaks against the temple. But nevertheless, the book of Acts is very clear that these were false witnesses. It says they set up false witnesses who said, "This man never ceases to speak words against this holy place and the Torah. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place." You see, this verse is taken as proof in Christian theology. What was Jesus about? He came to destroy the temple. But it says false witnesses. It's very important that we don't agree with the false witnesses. Stephen's response to these false witnesses is he takes us on a little tour of biblical history. He takes us on a tour of the Torah and shows us the biblical basis for the temple system. And he shows us the biblical basis for the authority of Moses. And then he shows us how the Messiah comes as the prophet like unto Moses and refutes these charges. But I would go so far as to refer to the Jerusalem community of believers as a temple sect, a sectarian movement in the temple, because the temple was their center place of worship. They never built a church. They didn't build a synagogue in those first that first generation that was like, you know, this is the messianic synagogue in Jerusalem. They were in the temple. I've even made the argument, I don't know if it's correct or not, but I think it's logical, that their name, what's their name? I mean, we have lots of names for them, sect of the Nazarenes and so forth, but the name that they're the most well-known by, Ecclesia, the church, eh? The church, you've heard of that, but what does church mean? Assembly. So I have a theory about where this comes from. I think it's a natural sort of evolution. In the Torah, it's kahila, adat, and these are temple-related words. It's the assembly in the wilderness. They assemble at the entrance to the tent of meeting. And I think there's a sort of natural evolution. If you were like saying to one another, hey, I mean, pretend we're believers in Jerusalem. Just imagine, we're going back to the first century, we're believers in Jerusalem, part of the apostolic community, and every day we're saying to one another, I'll see you in assembly, because of course we're in the temple every day, and that's the assembly. So I'll see you in the temple. I'll see you at the assembly. You gonna be at the assembly today? Well, of course I'm gonna be at the assembly. Where do you think I'm gonna? Yeah, I'll be at the assembly. And so it's a very natural evolution for this kahila, this assembly, to take on in Greek ekklesia, and then we translate that word as church. But we're missing the origin of it. Another thing we see in the book of Acts is that the believers in Jerusalem were practicing a type of communal living, weren't they? Selling their possessions, moving in together, moving into like this communal sort of living together and wearing flower print dresses. And we often read this and think that this is the model of how all Christian communities should live. Communism. It's like, this is how it should be. But have you ever noticed that this never seemed to happen anywhere else? Did you ever hear Paul talking about this sort of thing? No, instead, everyone's in their own homes, and he's like encouraging them to like set aside money and so forth. It doesn't happen outside of Jerusalem. Why? What makes Jerusalem so special? And the thing that makes Jerusalem so special that you needed this sort of situation in Jerusalem was the presence of the temple. All of those first 12 apostles were Galileans. They did not have property in Jerusalem. They didn't live in Jerusalem. But they didn't want to leave Jerusalem after the resurrection. So that they found a way to stay in Jerusalem. And this was the same with all. How about those 3,000 pilgrims who came up for Shavuot, who became believers? They didn't want to leave. So it was this, the presence of the temple forced that, necessitated that selling of property, moving in together, so you could be at the house of God every day, so you could be continually a part of this thing. Like Yosef Barnavi, he sells his property in Cyprus, moves to Jerusalem. Stephen, who knows where he's from, moves to Jerusalem. Hanania and Sapphira sell their property, moved to Jerusalem. It's the temple that has drawn them there because they're a temple sect.